Roger the mic, start.
The meeting is over. Maybe that's the best way to call you to order. Can we start by asking for apologies, if there are any? Honorable Paulson from the EFF, and the minister and the deputy minister, and Mr. Singh, and DG for environment is on sick leave. Those are the apologies that I have. I'll take a hand if there's any other further apology. Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. May I please register the apology of Honorable Mchun.
Beyond apologies, I would like to welcome you, honorable members. Welcome the two entities, Isimangaliso and South African Weather Services, the department, and any other guests that we might have. So you are all welcome. And I think we all know what we are about. We are dealing with the annual reports today for Isimangaliso and South African Weather Service. As the Portfolio Committee, we are doing what we are supposed to do. Oversee the actions of the executive by asking questions on behalf of those that we represent. And when I say those that we represent, the different MPs, yeah. We have got specific mandates. That's what informs us. There are also communities we interact with. So some of the questions that we ask, they might not be what you expect, but expect anything from us because we're coming from different experiences, different instructions. So generally, the interaction, you are the ones who are talking more. For us, it's going to be... So let me specifically now focus on Isimangaliso and specifically hand over to the chairperson of the board, who will then take charge of this until we get to that item 2.1. But before that, can honorable members get a proposal for the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Kancho.
I move for the adoption of the agenda, Chair. Morning, Chair. I second the move for the adoption of the agenda.
I see no other hand that would have a different view. So we are done with item one. We are now on item two. Can I ask the chairperson of the board office, Mangaliso, to give us an overview and by implication take over and guide that item number two. Over to you.
Chairperson, good morning, and thank you very much. Thank you very much to the members. We are honored to be afforded the opportunity to be able to present through to the House the performance of our entity over the past financial year 18-19. We will bring to the attention of the House that it is a year of six halves. The first 6 months happened to have been led by the late Professor Anis Karodia, who passed on just after he had handed over the role through to the CEO, who is to my right, Mr. Sibusiso Bukosini. Further to his right is the Chief Financial Officer, who will obviously be speaking to the financials as we go through the program. I'd like to also highlight, Chair, that it is the year in which we had the full board operational, the year in which we had the transition from being an advisory board to a management and accounting authority board. I would also like to highlight that it was the year in which we sadly lost our minister, who was in charge of environmental affairs. We had an interim minister, we had an acting minister, and then in May of this year, we had a fully appointed minister who had an expanded portfolio. It is a year in which we also went through an organizational redesign process. So when the CEO presents the high-level structure of the organization, there will be an indication of some significant shifts that took place in relation to who are the people who lead the entity going into the future. It is also a year in which we went through a matching and placing process, which means after we had done some serious job descriptions, position descriptions, and then looking into the competencies, we were able to place persons into positions. And fortunately, through the process, no one was we separated with by way of retrenchment. We were able to be able to absorb everybody as a result of that. But in the process, we also had an expanded organization because there were roles that had previously not really been taken care of as adjusting to the needs of the entity, which is a World Heritage Site. It is also a year in which we marked the two decades of existence. That in itself began to be able to challenge us to see how, when we step into year 2020, which will be the year of maturity as we turn 21, we will need to be able to position the entity even on a greater height and a greater space as well. And with that, we looked into how we were going to be strengthening and improving our relations with key stakeholders, as it were. We've been able to retain talent in the organization. We have had attrition that has largely been as a result of retirement. We've had a few persons who, as a result of the changes that took place, began to be able to say to themselves they would prefer to work in different roles altogether. We have a dozen amakosi in our area, and we have strengthened relations with those. With the CEO coming in, one of the things that he devoted himself to was to be able to ensure that the traditional leadership receives the attention that it deserves, because as we appreciate, the land on which we operate is land that has a lot of historical connections, at which there are some at a local level who would believe that they had been displaced in order to be able to provide room for our nature to be provided space to roam freely, and also for fauna to grow as it should be. We've maintained regular communications during this period. It is a period within which we've also continued in terms of how we work with entrepreneurs, particularly small entrepreneurs. We've paid attention to what goes on with the local entrepreneurs, with a specific emphasis on ensuring that those who have the expertise and can deliver that which is required in the entity are afforded that opportunity. We've expanded the roles in which they operate so as to ensure that they're not only allocated to the most basic of roles, but they are able to get into roles wherein what they deliver in the park can also be extended beyond the park. We've gone through a process where we've revised our procurement processes, and some of the service providers that we had had for a very long time, we had had contracts in perpetuity, have had some reviews done because it became necessary to ensure that our supply chain management system was implemented and consolidated as it needed to be. It is also in this period that we've also strengthened our relations with our neighbors in Mozambique to a point where we've ensured that where there was a need for species to be provided over in order to increase the species on their parks, we could actually be able to hand them over there. It's a period in which we've also looked into our relationship with one of the key state providers, KZN Ezemvelo. We've had to be drawing a lot closer with them, and it became necessary to be able to do so, fortunately, because the CEO we have has a history of having worked there, has interacted with them, and gotten to understand what is contained in the agreements that should be there and needed revitalization. It is the period within which we've looked into our assets and checked how they can be improved so as to be able to ensure that the World Heritage Site status is sustained, but more importantly, more and more people find that their visit through to the East Mangaliso Wetland Park area is something that they can write home about and bring in more tourists to come in our direction. It is also a period within which we've looked into, we had said for ourselves with the four programs that had been set out of the 35 that we had, more than 75%, more than three quarters of what was laid out for us was achieved and in many areas exceeded from what had been laid out. There are areas within which some have been partially completed and partially achieved, and there are a few within which, and the CEO will go into the detail around what it was that we did not achieve conclusively. And in the process of doing that, we have entertained and worked with the Auditor General in a manner that ensured that what was captured was information that reflected on what really happened in the area. We've refined our performance management processes to a point where it is clear now what it is that we are monitoring and evaluating the performance of the senior executives around. We are seeking to be able to ensure that East Mangaliso becomes the beacon and a center of excellence. After 20 years of existence, we're wanting to be able to make it such that when we invite members of the committee to be able to visit us, they will actually find something that they can also be proud of. We have the responsibility. We take that not lightly at any time. We appreciate that everybody has that which was proclaimed first as the World Heritage Site as something that is a jewel that sets and positions itself in northern KwaZulu-Natal. At this point, I'd like to pass on over to the CEO, who will then take us through our performance as it is reflected on the annual report, for which there was the four words put together by our minister. The period within review had been one which was as a Ministry of Environmental Affairs, and of course, if we look into right up until the end of March, that's what it was, and the reporting is of that nature. We've transitioned into DEF, and we're excited about the pulling together of the like entities that make our work consistent with when we're dealing with environmental matters with our neighbors who are doing things in the forestry space. We can actually be able to challenge with an alignment of entities, as it were. And of course, fisheries, we have special species in our area, and therefore there is definitely an alignment in environmental affairs forestry and fisheries. I'll pass on now to our CEO, and he will take us through. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members of the portfolio committee, colleagues, the chairperson has indicated that I'll be taking you through the presentation. And maybe first and foremost, I must just indicate that this presentation is based, the 18-19 financial year is based on the audited annual financial statements for 2018-19, and therefore it's going to draw a lot on those annual financial statements, but the audited one. It also draws a lot from the annual report, which we submitted, and key highlights are going to be presented at the end of the report that I'll be presenting. It is also important to acknowledge, as the chairperson of the board has indicated, that it has been a transitional year, a transition year. So a number of targets which were set, some of them especially where we indicate areas around partial achievement, were largely due to the fact that there were critical positions which were vacant in the 18-19 financial year, which we are happy to report that we have successfully filled them in this current financial year. So therefore, there is going to be significant progress. So as we report, you will realize that when we come to the actual performance for the annual year, or for the year that we're reporting, you will only see targets that were met and targets that were not met. So we're not talking to partial achievement, but in the report or in the presentation itself, I then go through what we have reported to as partial achievement. Chair, you are probably aware, as the chairperson has indicated, that we are the first World Heritage Site, which was inscribed in 1999. And the three objectives of that act, one is to conserve, present the World Heritage Site, which is the park, but secondly, to ensure that we empower the historically disadvantaged communities, because the bulk of the park is where there is serious poverty in the area. Therefore, the World Heritage Convention Act had to respond to such social illnesses. And thirdly, is to ensure that we bring about ecotourism development in the area, and also use ecotourism to influence the economy of the area with an intention of improving the socio-economic issues in the area. In light of that, Chair, we then had a strategic objectives, and the strategic objective of the authority is conservation and enhancement of the World Heritage values. And in order to achieve that, the park had to make sure that we are relevant, especially to communities and a number of other stakeholders living adjacent to the park. And this is beyond the delivery of the economic benefits, but we had to be relevant, and we'll explain how we are doing that as we carry on with our presentation. So this slide presents the issues that we've taken into consideration when we're developing the strategy. The first one being the mandate as enshrined in the Act, which is the World Heritage Act, but also to align with the national government agenda, the national priorities for the environment determined by the Department of Environmental Affairs, which is now DEFF. the national priorities set by government for social and economic development in terms of the National Development Plan. That, of course, aligned with the provincial growth and development strategy, as well as the district's growth and development plan and strategy, to make sure that there is that alignment across the three spheres of government, which is the national, provincial, as well as the local government sector. The local, provincial, and regional context circumstances were taken into consideration, and Ismail Aliso's integrated management plan, as well as the institutional risks, to understand what are the risk areas that we must be looking at as an organization and how we come about ranking those risks so that we can come up with mitigatory measures to deal with those risk areas. As indicated, in 1819, when we started off, we had director park operations. We've got the minister, the board, the chief executive officer, and I took over the reins from the interim chief executive officer. But underneath that, we had director park operations, which in the strategy review and the organogram review, we have changed that position into an executive manager biodiversity conservation. And we have also, we had director business. That position was vacant for a very long time. I am also happy to report that it has now been filled, as I indicated earlier on, and it is now termed Executive Manager Tourism and Business Development, and it looks at all the ecotourism and business development related matters. We also had Senior Manager Development and Planning, but operating, if I may use the word, as a director for socio-economic development, but that position has now, through the matching and placing, been properly graded, and we now have a position which is Executive Manager, Socio-Economic Environment and Development, which is now in place. And there is an incumbent in that position as we speak. There is also a Chief Financial Officer who is in my extreme right, who has been there in the financial year under review. In the programs that we have, the first program is park operations, which is mainly conservation, and the second one is transformation, which is social and, economic and environment development, and the third one is commercialization, which deals with the ecotourism and your business development areas. And the last one is finance and administration. So we had four programs in the 18-19 financial year that we had in our annual performance plan, informed obviously by our corporate strategy. In terms of the performance and the summary results for the year ended 18-19, under program park operations, we achieved 11 targets, and three of those targets were not achieved, which means that if you calculate, we had 14 targets, and out of that, only 11 were achieved, and only three were not achieved, and 11 were achieved. In the second program, which is transformation, we achieved three instead of five, so two was partially achieved. So we, as I said earlier on, raised that in our summary of the performance as not achieved. But when we report, we indicate that it was achieved because there is work that was done, and we'll demonstrate what exactly that was. Commercialization, we had seven, but again, through trying to work with colleagues and making sure that there is support, despite the fact there was no executive manager, we managed to achieve seven targets, and all of the targets that were set were achieved. And under finance and administration, we had six that we achieved, and two that we've reported as partially achieved, and one that we've reported as not achieved. So in total, 27 achieved, and 4 not achieved, and 4 partially achieved. So this slide, the second slide, this slide now depicts exactly what I was saying earlier on, to say which of the, how many of the targets that we could not meet. It's 8, which is 4 not achieved and 4 partially achieved, but we've ranked that as not achieved, and we say 8 in number. So the percentage-wise, the percentage in terms of targets that were not achieved amounts to 23%, and targets that were met, it's 40, excuse me, it's 40%, and targets that we exceeded in terms of the performance is 37. Now, if you look at the combination of both targets that we met as well as exceeded, we're sitting at 77. So combined 77 and 23 amounts to that 100%, which makes the performance for the 18-19 financial year to sit at 77%. Reporting now on specific programs, park operations. The strategic objective for that program was effective conservation of the World Heritage values. Here are the achievements that we've got, Chair. We are now beginning to indicate how many this was the annual target. In the park management meetings attended with day-to-day conservation, we had 6 and we achieved 6. Environmental audits, 6, we achieved 7. There was we exceeded that. And number of follow-up environmental audits, 6, and we also achieved 7. And the environmental monitors deployed in Ismaili, so 120, and we achieved 120. And I'm happy to also report, Chair, that the environmental monitors that we appointed and deployed are from the local communities, and this has gone a long way in terms of building the relationship, especially with the communities living adjacent to the park. Number of hectares invasive and alien treated plants is 59,987, and we exceeded that to 68,71. And this is because here we expanded the program, because in the past or during the year under review, the focus was on one section of the park, and the approach that we took with the board was to say there must be an equitable distribution of work opportunities and business opportunities in the park. And thank you to the department. They graced us with an additional $5 million grant, which helped us to exceed this target, which was set in 1819. Number of kilometers of the accessible coastline that we cleaned, we have a 320-kilometer coastline, and we managed to clean the entire 320 in the year under review. Number of hectares burnt in the controlled burning program. The annual target was 1,750. In terms of our records, we burnt 1,764. So ideally, we should be reporting exceeding of the target in that column. However, when we engaged with AG, they were not too comfortable with the evidence which was brought forward to them in terms of those hectares that we say or we claim to have burnt. And the issue was around the issue of the technical indicators, to say that they needed something which was more in line with the technical indicators. But more so, I think we also picked up that there was also proper understanding on their side in terms of the technical indicators that we used, even when we explained, and we decided not to argue this further. But this is one thing that we're working with AG. And if you go to the annual report, you will then pick up this is one area where they have qualified us in terms of the performance information when it comes to the audit report which they presented to us. Percentage applications processed in respect of developments in the buffer zone. We had an annual target of 80, and we achieved 100. Percentage of identified unauthorized development activities actioned legally. 100 is what we had to look at, and the achievement was 100. So we have commented and presented, as the chair would probably recall, when I was indicating some of the challenges that we have with the swamp forest destruction, the Lake Sibaya, and many other challenges which we are currently dealing with in this financial year. Percentage of completion of the annual infrastructure maintenance, 100, and 100 was indeed achieved. Number of the annual stakeholder engagements conducted, including the park forums, we planned to have 120 and we did achieve. And the communication strategy could not be achieved. And the percentage of that communication plan in that first year, we had planned 100 and we did not achieve at all. And the number of the community-based communication events, 2, and we achieved 2 as planned. In Program 2, which is Transformation, Social and Economic Development, number of the full-time equivalent, 550, we achieved 431. And Chair, you will recall that earlier on in the meeting that we had during the course of this year, I indicated the challenges that we've had in terms of the transfer or the timeous transfer of the NRM funding, and this is one of the reasons that made us not to achieve that. The number of the days, training days, 4,800, we managed to get 5,795, and this is purely because of that extension of the program throughout the park. Number of people participating in SMMEs and skills development programs, we planned 100 and we achieved 107. Number of students participating in the bursary and support program, 37, and we achieved 41. BE spent 60, planned, and only achieved 45. And all these which were partially achieved are attributed to that delay in receiving the funding, as I indicated earlier on. Program 3, which is commercialization, strategic objective there being to optimize the park's revenue generation in a commercially and environmentally sustainable manner that fosters job creation as well as empowerment of historically disadvantaged communities in line with that objective 2 of the World Heritage Convention Act. Revenue to the park, we had 20.7 that we planned for the 18-19. Achievement was 22.2. But you will then realize that in terms of the financial statements, we're sitting at 22.9, and this is because we made a correction in the annual financial statements during the auditing process. So that is why you see 22.2 as achievement, but when we were correcting the financials, we corrected them to be 22.9. Number of non-paying local neighbors entries is 135,000 that we planned, and we achieved 149,389, which is over and above what we had planned. And the number of paid visitor entries, we had planned to have 250,000, and we achieved in excess of 278,759. And this was as a result of improving this relationship with communities and having this portfolio committee approving and assisting us in approving free access, especially for communities who are coming to the park in the area in Sodwana, who are coming just for beach recreational activities. So before, what visitors were doing is that even the local communities were paying to come to experience the beach, and we said this cannot be the case because it was really contributing to the negative perception that communities had in the park. But what is interesting here, Chair, is that as soon as we initiated that process, we saw the picking up in terms of the visitor numbers, and we saw that warm relationship between us and the communities in the park. Percentage of the implementation of the commercial development plan, we had 80 and we achieved 80. The annual marketing events implemented 4 and we achieved 4. And the marketing programs, we planned 100, we achieved 100. And the annual infrastructure program, as I indicated earlier on, we had 90, we achieved 100. in program 4, which is finance and administration, percentage of the new approved research program and proposals that relate to the management, we had planned to have 50 under the research part of it, and we achieved 61. Cumulatively to Q3 or quarter 3, 10 of the 19 proposals were relevant. All four of the applications received in Q4 were also relevant. What we're also trying to do, in as far as this is concerned, is to have research proposals that begin to talk to or give us advice as management in terms of how we should be developing or responding to certain issues that prevail within the park. So these are the research projects that we've approved in the 18-19 financial year. Park monitoring programs implemented, monitoring of impacts, implementation on the ecological health of Lake St. Lucia. Achievement, its monitoring reports were completed for each quarter. And the number of visitor market surveys, we had 2 and we only achieved 1. And the number of learners visiting the park, we planned to have 5,000 and we managed to have 5,210. And the percentage of implementation of plans to mitigate the impacts of identified threats, rare and endangered species in the of the ecosystem, 50, and we achieved 50. Completion of plans requested or required with financial, within the financial year, it was 100 and we achieved 100. In terms of the audit opinion that we obtained, Chair, I am happy to mention that we obtained, we had planned to obtain an unqualified audit opinion, and we did indeed achieve an unqualified audit opinion with few matters which we have taken into serious cognizance in terms of developing an action plan, and I will talk to that as I elaborate on these issues. Percentage of retention skills, 90 and 89. We just missed that by 1. And assessment and percentage of implementation of the business improvements, 100, but we could not get any. And one of the reasons was that we could not get any response at the time from CETA, even after the intervention of the National Treasury. The situation that we had in 18-19 was a very uncomfortable situation where financials were prepared straight from using the spreadsheet, Excel spreadsheet, and but we did manage, as you see, we have this unqualified audit opinion later in the year to procure caseware, and we think that this is going to be good work going forward. Chair, the next slide provides you with a summary of the revenue analysis. Park revenue was sitting at 14%, and the management fees, administration, and this is the interest that we've earned, and this is other income, your sundry income, which is 2%, grants and subsidies, public contribution, 79%. Now, this picture, Chair, begins to demonstrate again to you that in as much as we are saying that we've received, we've made significant amount of money as an entity, but the reality is we are still grant dependent. This is a picture which needs to be changed going forward. And you will see when we explain the issue of the liquidity ratio that it shows a healthy financial status, but it's worrying when you look at it under the current circumstances, situations where there is public purse shrinking, that you have an organization or an entity which is so heavily dependent on grants. And this is a picture which we want to look into in terms of changing the business model. And one of the issues that we have put forward to the portfolio committee and the board is the issue of taking over the commercial operations from KZN Wildlife and run those commercial operations as Ismailizo, because a lot of revenue that we're generating is not directly coming to us, but it goes to Ezenvelo. But if it were the other way around, I think the park revenue figure was going to be significantly different, and then showing a complete different picture than what we are looking at now. Expenditure analysis, personal cost net charge out at 10%, and project costs, we're sitting at 21%. The depreciation and amortization, amortization relates to your intangible assets in the main, that collectively relates to 21%. And the depreciation, one of the reasons why it got up to 21% is because some of the assets that we inherited during when we had that management agreement with KZN Wildlife were in a very dilapidated state and not inhabitable. So we had to demolish those assets, and therefore we depreciated. So in our books, they are showing in that sense that we have disposed of those assets. Contracted services, 11%. And other operating expenses, we're sitting at 37%. Financial summary, the total revenue for the year was 163 million, of which 79% was from the grants, as explained earlier on, and 14% was that revenue, the park revenue, and the other one was the 7% that I indicated. The expenditure decreased by approximately 10 million from the 176 million to 165 because during the course of the year we managed to implement serious cost containment measures in the entity. As I said, if you look at the liquidity, the current asset exceed liabilities is 17.3 million, which in terms of the liquidity ratio we're sitting at 1:1. 0.02, it looks healthy. But the fact of the matter is, if you go back to that pie chart that I demonstrated, there's heavy reliance on grants, and it's a picture that definitely needs to be changed in this situation. 2018-19 performance against the final budget. As we all know that we're working on a zero-based budget, and it's calculated on a modified cash basis of accounting. The actual amount is therefore calculated on the modified cash basis. The net surplus that we got, therefore, was 44.5, which is due to a difference in the basis of the preparation of the budget, as I indicated earlier on, in line with the general recognized accounting practice graph. After taking into account the capital expenditure and the accrual basis of the accounting, the loss would balance to the statement of the financial performance, which is in the audited financial statement. This slide, Chair, once again gives a clearer picture in terms of what was the final budget. If you look at the performance against budget, based on million rand, we had that 220.1, but actual was sitting at 160.1, and the net favorable variance was 39, and this was due to the rollout of the infrastructure procurement plan, which was revised and deferred as an organization was undergoing the transitional period, which I explained earlier on. Admin fees 1.8, actual was 2.6. The net favorable variance again was 0.7, and we recovered this from project expenditure. Park revenue, as indicated, it was 21.3, and this is on the base because we're looking at a cash basis. It was 25.4. Now, you may be confused when you look at these figures, especially on the park revenue side, because earlier on I said it was 22.2. And when we corrected the financial statement, it was sitting at 22.9, but now I am talking about 25.4. This is the earlier one was on the basis of an accrual basis, in other words, which means that we had our creditors and our debtors where we sent invoices. But when we come here, this is on cash basis. This is the actual cash that at the end of 18-19 financial year we collected. Some of it may have been a cash that was supposed to be paid in the previous financial years because we put too much emphasis on the age analysis to see debtors from 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and 130 days, and we did a follow-up. So we managed to recover a lot of our monies that were owed to us in that sense. Other, which is sundry, 12.9, 8.6, and 4.2 was a favorable variance that we realized. Chemicals, these are the figures, Chair, 4.9, 5.0, and it was favorable on 0.1. And the depreciation and amortization that I was talking to, it was 37.5, actual was 35.4, and it was 2.2, as I indicated earlier on when I was explaining about the issue of the assets. Personnel costs, 20.4 and 17.3, and it was 3.1, which was a favorable one. And contracted services, it was 14.0 and actual was 26.0. One, and the favorable variance there was 12.0. So the final budget there was based on operational allocation, and the project plan included the 12 million for the maintenance, which was allocated against the project costs. Management and administration was 0.9, and actual was 0.4, and the variance was 0.5. The professional fees, the budget was 6.2, it was 7.2 after the adjustment, and the net favorable was 1.0. Subcontractors, it was 24.5, and the actual was 28.1, based on the explanation that I provided earlier on in terms of the equitable distribution of the SMME opportunities throughout the park. Training, 4.0, and it was 6.8, and 2.8 as well in terms of the variance, and again the 6.8 in terms of the training is because of the training that we afforded to the SMMEs as well as the full-time equivalent jobs that we created through the distribution of that NRM funding that we got as 5 million from the department. Other, in terms of the sundries, it was 34.6 and 26.1, which amounted to 8.5. If you look at it in terms of the surplus and deficit, we were sitting at actual was 44.5 and favorable 44.5. And the variance there is due to the difference on the basis of the preparation of the budget as required in terms of the PFMA and the graph that I explained earlier on. Annual financial statements, Chair. As I said earlier on, we obtained the unqualified audit opinion on the audit of the financial statements with no significant or material findings. The Auditor General emphasized the following matters, which we are taking very seriously, and I'll explain how we are dealing with that. The entity at the present moment is a defendant in a fire claim lawsuit as disclosed in Note 21 of the audited financial statements that we've presented. And the entity has referred that claim to legal counsel, but I think we are confident that we have a winnable case in as far as that lawsuit is concerned. It was about the fire that broke into the commercial property of Sia Kubela, and the argument is whether we are responsible or it is something that was beyond our control. And I think we do have information from our legal representatives to prove that it was not of our making, and therefore we stand a very good chance in terms of having savings. But from the presentation of the financials, we had to make that in the notes so that there is a provision just in case we lose that case. The material loss of 6.83 million, 2018, 16.08 were incurred as a result of the assets that we disposed. And those are the assets that I was talking about, which we acquired when there was that management agreement between ourselves and KZN Wildlife. But we had to dispose those assets. And majority of them are now demolished, or some of them will be demolished. But in terms of the financial statements, we had to dispose because they were not going to add any value to us. In fact, they are a hazard to us as an organization. Legislative non-compliance, irregular expenditure amounts to 0.69 was incurred as disclosed in note 39 of the audited financial statements. for the current year and 2.705 in the previous year, which is 17-18. These amounts relate to a contractor that was appointed in 2011, where the time frame was not stipulated in the revised scope of work and it was not approved. It's one very odd situation because this is a contract which was an evergreen contract, and it's related to work of providing signage in the park. But I'm happy to report, Chair, that we have since dealt with that and that contract has now been terminated without any legal implications or litigation against us. Request for quotation where local content was not included in the request for quotations is another issue which was also cited quite significantly.
I'm a little bit lost. I don't have that that presentation with me. I'm trying to check it. I don't have.
Oh. Okay. We were alerted that we need to expand a little bit in terms of the AG report. So I must apologize, Chair. We've just added these slides to further explain the AG findings.
So in other words, you are explaining the summary that you gave us.
Yes, Chair.
No, it's fine for now, but like I'm saying, maybe in future, we'll talk the future. Okay. Now, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. We're almost done. We saw that it would be ideal that we bring the portfolio up to speed with exactly what happened, because normally, if you look at the audited financial statements and you see irregular expenditure and you don't understand exactly what happened, it's imperative that we provide that, and that's why we're explaining this. I must quickly rush, Chair, to explain that after receiving the audit report, we have developed an AG action plan. Because one of the key issues that AG is raising quite sharply, and I'm sure it's the same in a number of entities, is the deficiencies in the internal controls. And so our AG action plan is looking at what is the AG finding, but we go deeper in terms of understanding what are the root causes, and that's where we pick up that the majority of the issues are around the internal controls. And in terms of the internal controls, we've said in as much as we do have policies, we also need to develop the SOPs, the standard operating procedures, which we then attach in any, say, documents when we are processing any particular document to say, here is the policy, but this is the standard operating procedures, just to make sure that all the processes that need to be followed are adhered to. So that's part of the AG action plan that we've come up with to deal with the deficiencies, especially in the internal controls. Another issue, Chair, is that supply chain management unit has since been established. We never used to have an SCM, and the bulk of the challenges that we had, which relate to the issue of the internal controls in the entity, was merely as a result of that unit not being there. Revision of the SCM policies to include current legislation and prescripts is also an area that we looked at. Compliance checklist and using those SOPs that I'm talking to is an area that we looked at. Standardization of the RFQ, the request for quotation documents, and evaluation scorecards is what we've also made available. And training, we've also provided training for the newly established unit, the supply chain management unit. Annual performance plan on the audit program park operations, as I indicated, Chair, we got a qualification on that program because of that reason, and mainly the issue that we could not agree, or AG was insisting that the evidence that we submitted was not sufficient for them. So But from our side, we had 1.764 as hectares burnt, which was an exceeding of the 1,750 that we had planned in the 18-19 financial year. Management action plan, review of targets to ensure they are smart, internal audit quarterly review of the annual performance plan to verify portfolio of evidence and targets, but also, Chair, we have introduced something called quarterly financials, because this helps us that when we get to the annual financial statements, at least you would have been doing your quarterly financials. We've done the quarterly financial, especially in this financial year, for Q1, and we will be doing the quarterly financials. That helps in terms of understanding what are the deficiencies in quarter one so that you can improve in Q2. But it helps a great deal when you're compiling your annual financial statements at the end of each financial year. Key highlights that we've engaged ourselves in stakeholder engagement. I think the portfolio is aware that there has been turmoil, hostility, negative perception of communities. The minute you say Ismangaliso, people don't want to hear anything about Ismangaliso. So for us, the issue was to come up with a turnaround strategy of the negative perceptions of various stakeholders, especially the local leaders. So the approach was to make sure that the 12 Amakosi that are in the park or that are adjacent to the park are embraced in all our management activities, and in, communities are also part of that. Rollout of the infrastructure in various sections of the park through engagement with local leaders. We made sure that if there are employment opportunities or there are business opportunities, we distribute as widely as possible to those local communities as well, so that we don't have a situation where we have people coming far away to do what could otherwise be done by local SMMEs or local people who have the capacity to do so, unless if there is, that is a different situation. Restructuring of the organization, the establishment of a supply chain management unit, I've talked to that, matching and placing of staff to relevant positions in line with their skills and expertise, establishment of economic empowerment strategies for local communities. We've renegotiated the existing contracts to include the provisions of subcontracting, and I think that has really helped in building back, restoring that relationship with us and the communities, because now communities are feeling to be, in fact, they're participating in the economy aspect of the park. Securing additional funding to create job opportunities for communities in the northern section of the park, that's what I was talking about when I said we spread the program throughout the park. Review of the organization's business model, initiated towards self-sustaining of the organization, and equal access into the park. I think I've talked to these issues. Chair, thank you very much. That was our presentation for the annual report and our annual financial statements for the year 18-19. Thank you.
Chairperson, we thank you for the opportunity to be able to present our financials. We, as the board, have had the opportunity of sitting through the transitions, and we were able to give authorization to the financials as presented through and the complete annual report, as it were. Chair, I would also like to be able to commend members of the executive and the staff of Ismangaliso, who under really trying circumstances were able to meet what was required and in a number of places exceed what was required of them with limited staff. Things have improved as of the 1st of April of this year because we've been able to get more human capital, people employed into positions, and therefore a lot more work is being done in a manner that when we report our half-year performance, the committee will be appraised of improvements that have taken place. And I'd like to also indicate that should we be carrying on with this role during next year, well, into next year, when we present our financials, what has been indicated in the slides, which unfortunately members did not get to be able to have ahead of time, there will be a follow-through that would indicate work that is not just promised, but work that is being executed. We are doing as much as we can to ensure, from a board perspective, that the fiduciary responsibility that lies upon us, where 79% of the revenue is coming through from government grants, are well taken care of. It is our responsibility to ensure that the executive authority is at peace with what it is that we deliver, and those where we're generating our funds ourselves, we're also ensuring that the due cost containment is taken care of, so there would not be cases of frivolous expenditure and things that are done just for the sake of having them done. We are responsible as citizens, and we wanted to be able to ensure that the asset is viewed in the same light, as it were. We are grateful to the support that we've received from the portfolio committee prior to this and this standing committee. Again, as we indicated in our last meeting, we wish to be able to extend an open, wide invitation for you as members to experience our asset. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, honourable members, I think we are beginning to realise the gap in terms of communication, especially about this financials, if you like. I think it might come from us, the communication that gets to the entities as to how they should approach this. You can see that the approach is not the same. But appreciating that, I think it's your turn now. If there are questions, we're on 2.1, where we... So, Honorable Lorima, you are number one. You are number two at the extreme end. I don't know how that member ended up being there so far away. Honorable Kapa, you are number three. Honorable Mbata, you are number four. Honorable Modise, you are number five. It looks like for now, let's take those hands. Number one, Honorable Lorima.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's refreshing to see an unqualified opinion, so well done for that. Just a couple of areas. You talked about trying to grow the percentage of your revenue that comes from park income, and you talked about taking over from Isabella. Have you got a plan in mind? Have you started doing that? And if you did take over, what would be the possible impact on revenues that you generated? And then just a small question from towards the end of your presentation. You talked about free access to the park for locals. Does that mean locals in the municipality, along the borders, all South Africans? Could you just let us know what that means? Thanks.
Number two.
Thank you. I just want to ask about the destruction of the Swadwana Bay swamp forest. What is the status on that, and have we successfully engaged with the community on that? Then the status of the land claims, where does that stand? I know that land could be transferred, but not land use, and that this would not impact on the conservational value. I'd like to know, is that the status quo? With regards to the park infrastructure upgrades, I know that there was commitment towards fixing potholes, jetties, and a hardtop for the coastal forest reserve. So I'd just like to know where those projects stand. And then also the mining application on the boundary. I know I have brought this up in a prior presentation, and I think there was an environmental impact assessment conducted, into the feasibility and the conservational impact. But I know that also one of the experts actually distanced themselves from the report once it had been submitted. And I'd like to know why that is so. Obviously, was there something, there was a conflict of interest? Were they not in agreement with the findings of the EIA? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. Just a few. There's that in page 5, where there's that issue with the Auditor General, whether there's a possibility then that their attitude can change or approach can change, can be made to change in that one, where they've made you red. And also, you see, if you could have my experience, you would be very happy that I once had a situation where the Auditor General saying the problem is that the animals are not tagged, and we kept on explaining how animals were wild and so on and so on, until we took them to the animals, and they saw the animals wild, they even got injured themselves. They came back and still said the animals were not tagged. It remained like that. So you always expect them that there's no way, there's no explanation that satisfies them if what they wanted was not done. You also talked about the participation of community, which is improved and is something very important. But it also seems to me that maybe you also need to improve or intensify your communication there so that they should know exactly what is happening. They should know that it stands now for them to benefit. You know, if you are a Christian, you will remember that Jesus Christ was killed, but the people had come to rescue. Perhaps it was not properly communicated that he has come to rescue them. He simply said, I've come, I'm your king. That part of communication is important, because those people, if they, you don't communicate properly to them that this is what you benefit, this is what I'm doing for you, they will keep on getting other negative stories and fail to understand that this is to their benefit. There is also where you have a problem with, I think with the AG again, with the KPI, which it seems then your responsibility is to ensure that that KPI is defined in a way that does not become negative to you. They must get it correctly. On 9, there is that slide where there is no response, where the 100% is not done because there's no response. I wonder if it can just end there, because maybe it will continue giving you red if it is not addressed. And where do we intend to elevate this so that it does not continue in future? Or is there where you want the community to intervene? Because this cannot be left like that. It will continue and be negative on you in your performance. On 11, where you had, and again, you have saved, maybe on the part of finance, that is good. But now, maybe also it would be interesting that instead of having saved 10 million, you would have done more than spend less because of your money. Do the best that you could do, because it might be giving a bad impression or wrong impression that money was not necessarily needed, and yet you needed it, but you did add some extra activity that's made to save it. But with those, I think the report to me is positive enough, and especially that you always align. I mean, you always realize the shortcomings and promise to address them. But with the last part, I can sympathize with Honorable Mbatha with the last part which was missing on the presentation, which would correct in future. Maybe the chairperson should have explained it earlier, that this part is not in the presentation, because if you remember in that wedding in Galilee, the wine taster was very angry that the best wine was only brought at the end of the, when everybody attended, and they brought the best, so he was angry. But you can see that the information is very useful and is assisting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. At least today we started with a good report. Thank you for that, Ms. Mangaliso, compared to others. But I'm happy that you have tried, although we didn't have that in our documents, but it's a good attempt. It shows that you are proactive, although you received the information late. But next time, let's have it in our soft copies, in our emails. But on there's page 15 of the AG report where it talks about mileage log files that should be kept for all traveling with project owned. I think it belongs to you because it's from Working with Fire. Working with Fire belongs to you. And I didn't hear that respond very well, because it's very important, because it was the project-owned vehicles that we use, so the mileage were not. Or let me read it. Mileage log files should be kept for all traveling with project-owned vehicles, as the costs are recouped from the project funds. So maybe if you can touch that, because it's part of the how you manage your resources and assets. And then when you come to supply chain management, SCM, although you are correcting it, but I'm a little bit disturbed that such a good organization didn't have supply chain management processes in place. I mean, that's the first priority of the organization. The SCM and the finance management, those two are the core, because you need to do a lot of things based on them. But go to page 6 on your presentation that you gave us. The communication strategy, you didn't achieve it. It's very disturbing. Although your report is very good, communication is the key. That's where you communicate what you are doing so that the community can understand you very well. But if you don't do that correctly, it's a serious problem. And I think it needs to be corrected as soon as possible. And if I request that, it should be you must look at the language that you use so that the local community can understand. And those who cannot read and write can understand it very well. Page 7, you have the number of training days. But how many people have you trained? Did you train the women, the youth, disabled? And what is the impact of your trainings? Page 9. Monitoring reports of any, on the monitoring reports on page 9, you've achieved it, but I just want to know, in your reports, were there any negative negative issues that were highlighted in that report, if they were there, how did you resolve it? Because the reports of monitoring cannot be all 100% positive. There are hiccups, and how did you resolve them? Page 10. It's page 9, your monitoring reports. Let me just read it for you correctly. It's on the on page 9, the top one. A park monitoring program implemented. Where you're talking about the monitoring reports. It's on the top slide on that page. It's 1, 2, 3, 8, number 2. Sub-programs, research and development. And then if you go to page 10, on your expenditure analysis, you're saying that depreciation and what is it? Yeah, it's because of some assets were dilapidated. I just want to know that, do you have an asset register of all your assets, and how do you monitor it? And then before you destruct them, remember there must be a destruction committee that must approve the destruction of those assets for record keeping, and there must be a destruction certificate if you have that. It's just to highlight things to the committee that we need to have such information, because the assets are the key. You cannot just dispose them anyhow. Then on page 12, the last one, performance against budget. I can see here you're talking about chemicals. According to Waste Management Act, when you deal with chemicals, you must have safety data sheets, so that even when you dispose it, you attach the safety data sheet. How is it? How and where are those chemicals disposed? Because it's one of the hazard. It falls under hazardous substances, and it's the priority. It boils back to say, the entities, not only you, all entities, when they present, they must just highlight how they dispose, how they manage their waste within their environment. Because we're working with DIA, and DIA, one of the key issues is waste, chemicals and waste management. And then I think for now, that's all. Thank you.
You are the last talk.
Yes, Chair, I am. Thanks very much, Chair. I think let me join the chorus of welcoming an unqualified audit report. It indeed does bring fresh air. It confirms that at least there's a credible and reliable financial statement on your part as an institution, and at least you have complied with the legislation insofar as the day-to-day operations of the institution are concerned. And for that, you must be applauded. In the same wavelength, on the flip side of the coin, must register our dissatisfaction and disjunction on that presentation that was made. I'm sure you must have observed that as and when you were speaking, none of us was concentrating, because it was not easy to follow some of the things you were saying. And Chair, I think it must be registered that it is incorrect. It's not for the first time that it happens, that we sit in a committee and it's either we're given wrong documents or the documents that are given. It might not be yourselves, but the documents that were given tomorrow are not the same ones that are being presented. So I think it must be registered that
It must be called with its name. It's out of order. Now, I want to start, Chair. I observed that there are green areas in your document. Green to me means right. But most of your indicators there, in fact, your targets, in an event where your target is 6, you have achieved 6. In an event where your target is 7, you have achieved 7. Maybe 2 or 3 in J, where you have exceeded your target. I'm just wondering if it's a standard procedure that once you reach a target, you then push it aside and focus on the other, reach that one, push it aside, reach that one and push it aside, because there is no positive report of exceeding targets. I think it must just be a flect. You might not necessarily need to respond to that, because those are the findings and this is the report you are presenting. But I'm just saying, for future references and purposes, we might need to put a little bit of an accelerator in terms of exceeding some of our targets. And of course, Chair, you know, if we had enough time and the whole day, I would have liked to be taken through on page 5, the top slide there, effective conservation of World Heritage Values, the number of park management meetings attended with day-to-day conservation manager. You know, your target was 6, and you have achieved 6. if it was my world, I would have asked, but what kind of a target is this in the APP? Per financial year, you have 6 meetings, and you are proud to have achieved 6. I mean, meetings, really. Since Wednesday, since Monday, since we came here, we've attended more than 6 meetings, so we'd have met our annual target if we were Ismangalis. But I would not make an overemphasis, because Honorable Mbata has spoken on the significance of the communication strategy. And the fact that that KPI is not met, I think it's a problem. So we really need to look deeply into the percentage of the communication plan and the communication strategy. There's no way that both those targets could not have been met. In fact, one can argue that it's amongst the reasons that you're having problems with the surrounding communities. Because if you had flagged that communicating strategy and agreed that it was significant, it was going to help improve your ways of communication with the communities there. So I think it really needs to be looked at, but also it can't be zero. Zero. Zero is too much. Out of 100, you have achieved 0. Not even 1 or 0.1. It's too much. So I think it must really be looked at. Chair, on page 7, I think the Ismangaliso would care to take us through on why is the funding delayed? Who's in the wrong? Are you submitting business plans late, or is the department taking its own time to respond? Because if some of your targets are going to be partially achieved and we're told that it's because funding was delayed, somebody must be wrong. If it's yourself, tell us. If it's the department, also tell us, so that next time when you come here, we'll also remind you or them that no, it can't be that some of the targets are not met because there's a problem of delaying funding. And that time of delaying funding because of some signature has come to pass. We can't be delayed by a signature that is in Pretoria and when we must implement and deliver services in KwaZulu-Natal. If it means somebody must fly to go and sign, it must happen. As long as our people are getting services. Now, I think the last part, Chair, in page 9, there's something that disturbed me there as the CEO was presenting. I realized that there are annual targets that are met and exceeded, and there are those that are affected by resignations and mutual separation. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a manufactured answer. I think the CEO just included it on the way in his flight. he realized they are going to ask this one. It's a manufactured answer. It can't be that an annual target is not met because four people have resigned. Even if they were in the same department or sub-department, four of them have resigned and were told that's the reason why an annual target cannot be met. So essentially you are saying before they left, they were not doing anything. Or after they left, there was no replacement. As a result, that target could not be reached or nothing could be done. So I don't think that is a substantive reason on why we could not achieve a particular target, CEO. Even if they were in the same department, all four of them, I still argue that it could not have been this annual target could not have been met. But over and above all of that, congratulations on your unqualified audit report. Thanks very much.
Yes, Mangaliso response.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members for the constructive engagement. Let me start with the park revenue. The first question: how do we plan to deal with that? In the previous portfolio committee, we presented this scenario and we said, if you talk about this, Mangaliso, and I'm sure you, it's the first World Heritage Site, and as government we want to be proud about this, Mangaliso, and it's an international recognized park. Now, we said what has been the case for many years is that we have this agreement which was signed in 2000, if not 2001, with KZN Wildlife, wherein we said KZN Wildlife is going to work with us in terms of providing the conservation services to Ismailiso as well as commercial operations. But if you look at those agreements, they were supposed to end at a particular time. But for some reason, they never ended. Now, we've brought forward to the portfolio committee to say this is not working for us because the situation that KZN Wildlife finds itself in at the present moment is such that they are just unable to deal with a number of things. If you look from the conservation side of things, when a field ranger retires or when someone passes on, they don't replace those positions, which is a serious concern from a conservation front. But coming back to the question of the park revenue, on the commercial operations, we have establishments like your Cape Vidal, Mkuze, Kosi Bay, and Mapelane that are in a derelict kind of a status, and there is absolutely no budget. Even if you look at the three-year budget cycle from a medium-term expenditure framework to even provide issues of maintenance, and we're saying it basically becomes an antithesis to market this park because when guests or visitors come in, you don't have a place to accommodate them. We are just lucky in St. Lucia that we've got facilities that are there to host or to accommodate our visitors, but otherwise we're not capable in terms of what is there. Now the approach is, given the situation that we've got, is how do we deal with that? So we've discussed with the board and we said the best thing that we can do is to explore what can be done, what are the options. There are a number of options that have explored, but what we've looked at, and it's nothing that we have approved yet, but it's something which says, given the current financial situation in government, it would be difficult to say, department, give us 200 million or 300 million to refurbish the facilities. So the best way of doing that is to say, can we agree, one, that as conservation agencies, we are not best suited to run the commercial facilities. And the best way would be to say, can we commercialize, approach it from a commercialization strategy, get people who know the business, but when we do get them, we get them to refurbish these facilities, and then we begin to discuss the issue of lease or lease agreements and rentals or a percentage of the gross annual turnover. So that's what we're looking at, and we are hoping that if we can get that right, we will then have the capacity to accommodate a number of visitors, and by so doing, that is going to increase our revenue significantly. So that's the plan that is brewing as we speak. The free access is for communities that are adjacent to the park, who are abutting the park, and it relates to, it's a limited access, if I may use the word, because what used to happen before, if you want to go with your family from the same community and experience the Sodwana Beach, you had to have at least 55 rand to enter, and let alone paying for the car. And paying for, if you've got 15 family members, you must pay for those 15 family members. So we said, and that was contributing to this negative and hostile situation between us and the community. So we said, if you are coming in to enjoy the beach, we're going to give you free access. But if you are coming in to go to the restaurant, it means you afford. If you're coming in to do scuba diving, you can afford. If you're coming in to do other expensive recreational activities, you can afford. And therefore, those are people that we say must pay so that we also don't lose revenue on that side. Destruction, second question, destruction on the Sodwana Swamp Farm Forest. This has been a very worrying issue. And it's been there for quite some time. What has happened, the approach is that, and you will know, normally when you are confronted with these situations, the first answer that comes to a conservationist is law enforcement. But we've said history has proved that law enforcement, even if you carry the biggest gun ever in the country, communities, if they are agitated, they will always do what they are doing in terms of disrupting. So the approach has been now to come up with a solution which says, especially now that we've started the strategy of engaging and working with these communities, and there is at least that sense of working together. So we have gone to the local inkosi at Gwambila in Botswana. And it is very interesting to note what we've picked up when we got in there. What we have realized is that a number of people who are there, some of them are from the local communities because they are arguing that this is the only area where they can cultivate and plant their vegetables. But they are also saying that they have seen an influx of people from other areas, not necessarily from the area. So we have come to an agreement that we are establishing a task team with them, wherein we are going to identify those who are coming from other areas so that we can eliminate them. But the approach now is to say we have engaged the Department of the Land Affairs side, and we've engaged Agriculture, we've engaged COCTA, we've engaged ETIA. The intention there is to say, when we engage with these communities, can we identify land outside of the proclaimed protected area, which can be fenced, and can we get agriculture to do soil testing to determine what crops can be grown in that piece of land? And COCTA comes in, the LED side of COCTA and Umhlosana Development Agency, to facilitate the issue of the offtake agreement so that when they are planting cabbages, those cabbages can be used in the nutrition scheme, that education, so that at least we say, we are taking you out of this place, we are placing you here as an alternative, but these are the benefits of you being there, as opposed to say, get out and be in a despair kind of a state. So that is the approach that we're taking in as far as that is concerned. We've recently met with these departments, and we will be meeting with the communities in the next, I think during the course of this month, and we're hoping that the problem is going to be arrested, especially now because there is a platform that has been created in terms of engaging with the communities as what it used to be before, where nobody wanted to listen to what Ismail Aliso is coming up with. The status of the land claims, we've got about 14 land claims in the park. And the majority of those land claims are settled. And some of them have what is known in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act as Section 42D agreements, which basically means that they are settled in line with the Cabinet Memorandum, which says upon the settlement of a land claim, in as much as communities can own land, but those pieces of land are going to be used for conservation purposes in perpetuity. And the government appointed a conservation entity will continue to operate until otherwise decided by the department. So from a risk point of view, I think that is under control, and there is a clear understanding in as far as that is concerned. The only issue that we're dealing with is the issue of benefit sharing, which is dealt with through the co-management agreements as well as a people and park structure which seeks to address those issues. And this is exactly what we are working on, and we're seeing positive results to date in as far as that is concerned. Park infrastructure upgrade. We had received an amount of, I can't remember, but it was 70 plus 40 million, about 111. But that money could not be used, Chair, in the last financial year, in 18-19. Because if you go to Sodwana today, you will have, I don't know whether I must say, a road with potholes or potholes with a road. Because it's just too many potholes. The problem there was that communities could not allow Ismangaliso to implement any project. They said, if you've got 200 million or 500 million, take your 500 million, we don't need it. Leave us here. And but through the engagement that we've had with the communities, we've since agreed and resolved, and the stabilization has created a situation. If you look at our website, you will realize that we have since now advertised for those projects, and we will soon, in the better part of this financial year and next year, be seeing that development taking place in the park. So that's one of the reasons that affected us a lot in terms of implementing that budget. The mining issue, as Ismangaliso, we have commented on the EIA, as you correctly indicated, the consultant that was appointed to prepare a document left too much to be desired in terms of the quality of that document. And we've expressed our concerns, and we've highlighted those issues. But be that as it may be, the area which they were looking at mining on the periphery of that Mapelane Reserve, but we've since also discovered that the former president had already declared that area as a protected area as well. So in as much as it appears they, in their understanding, it was looked at as if it is a buffer zone, when in fact it's not a buffer zone, it's part of the protected area. So that's one area. So that's one of the reasons that we said, and remember, we don't approve or disapprove, but we comment, because DMR is the responsible authority. So we've commented against the mining because we understand what it means. This despite your concept of science versus science in as far as mining is concerned, because science at some point will say, if you mine, you can rehabilitate. And the other part of science can say, if you rehabilitate, you can't rehabilitate to the original state. So I think we subscribe to the latter. AG comment in terms of that hectares banned. Yeah, I think this is an issue, as you're saying, that sometimes you must, it's an understanding. We picked up it was an understanding issue from the AG side, because when you do bans, as you can see in the APP, it's controlled bans. It's not just ad hoc banning. So controlled bans, ideally, you would have your ecologist saying, these are the areas where you must ban, because we do banning for conservation purposes, and it's controlled. And we do that to manage our habitat, because if you don't ban, you've got something called moribund grass that grows underneath and inhibits the growth of the new grass. So we were trying to explain and explain and explain, and we realized we were not winning, and we decided to let go, especially because it did not have a significant impact in terms of the audit outcome. It is predetermined objectives from an AG perspective, which meant that it doesn't really affect us significantly in terms of the annual financial statement. So, but we've decided to engage AG in this financial year as we go to explain to them how do we play this game, so that they can also understand the rules of the game.
So, if I may, one of the points that we had to be haggling with the AG on was the fact that they did not see a before the burn picture and the after burn picture. So effectively, they say they require of us to have had a helicopter take a picture, indicates what it was that was that required burning, and then have a picture after the burn, and that would be able to satisfy them that we've done what and we've burned the area that we claim to have burned. But it is as the member indicated, there is a necessity to be able to bring them over to appreciate what we do deal with.
Thank you, Chair. Communication, I think a lot of members have expressed that, and it's true. It's a very true observation. One of the challenges, we as an entity have been doing a lot of work, but we have just been failing in terms of communicating that. And that, unfortunately, brought us into this negative perception and soured relationships between ourselves and the communities. Now, what we've done as an organization, as a remedial action, is that we've prioritized the appointment of a communications manager, and we've elevated the position to a managerial position to demonstrate that we take the matter seriously. So we now have a full-time incumbent, so you're not going to be seeing zeros and reds when it comes to communication going forward. And in fact, we are beginning to see results because of what I'm saying. We have this constant communication that is going on now. But yes, it was really one of our serious weaknesses in the 18-19 financial year. Savings, you will be pleased, Chair, to know that one of the reasons, and I think it's all probably throughout in government organizations and entities, is poor contract management, poor contract monitoring and management. So when I got in, Chair, one of the issues was to say, let me have a look at all the contracts that we have as a Smangaliso, as the entities. So one of the issues that we picked up is that we had service providers to a large extent who were taking us for a ride. Submit invoice, but now if you follow up in terms of work done, you then realize that that work has not been done. So we took those service providers to task. Some of those service providers decided to leave because it was getting tense. And some of the quoted work, when we analyzed even the issues of your BOQ, the bill of quantities, we realized that because that's the game that our project managers play, they would escalate the price of the project because they charge a percentage fee. Their fees are based on the amount of the project. If the project is 60 million and you are a consultant and you're charging 2% or 5%, that's how you score. So we then looked at all those issues and we said, no, but these projects can't be this much, and there must be this much because this is what the BOQ is saying. So contract management and monitoring brought about these significant changes. Mileage, log files, I think this is misplaced because we don't have project vehicles. Maybe they're referring to another entity, not us. We only have I think they're referring to somebody else. Supply chain management, fully agree. It is quite concerning that an organization of this caliber did not have supply chain management, which is why my initial step was to make sure, as together with the board, that we do establish that. The problem, which I think the portfolio must be made aware of, is that Ismail Aliso, for the past 10 years, had a very awkward situation of an accounting officer who was also an accounting authority. Very, very, very strange. So the board was not an accounting authority, the board was an advisory board. Now, you can imagine what happens in a situation like that. So that is the reason why we found ourselves in what we have, especially when you look at issues of your irregular expenditure, because you get a situation where there is no adherence in the legislative framework and treasury guidelines and practices in terms of how you go about that. So SCM had to be a priority for us to make sure that we bring things back to order. But over and above that, policies as well as the SOPs to make sure that we manage that. The number of training days, whether we've trained youth, women, and the disabled, yes, I think we just fell short in terms of explaining exactly how many youth, how many disabled, but it's one of the criteria because EPWP is very explicit and strict in terms of that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be getting our monies from the department in making sure that is in place. Park monitoring, it's basically because of that agreement that I was talking about. That agreement reduces the responsibility of Ismail Aliso into playing an oversight role over KZN Wildlife, as opposed to Ismail Aliso playing an active role in terms of conservation. So what that agreement says is that there are going to be sessions or meetings that are going to be held between Ismail Aliso and KZN Wildlife, where we meet with the entity and the park manager to follow through in terms of his work that is undertaken in the park. A very, very, very awkward situation. So those meetings are structured because then you have these six meetings where you get this meeting and you get updated on how the IMP is being implemented, and if you're not happy, you raise those issues there. There's a follow-up, and that's why the number is six. It's basically why we're raising these concerns with this agreement that we have between ourselves and KZN Wildlife, because we're basically not on the ground. But if you look at the legislation, and the expectation is that we have the mandate in terms of conservation. Chemicals, we don't dispose chemicals as an entity, but the chemicals that we're referring here to are the chemicals for the alien plant clearing. Sorry? It's herbicides mainly. You know, when we cut these plants and we put these chemicals so that it doesn't grow back again. But I think the issue of safety or occupational health and safety issues, we've taken those very seriously. As we speak, we do have an occupational health and safety committee, and we are indeed looking at the issue of making sure that we adhere to those processes so that we are not found wanting when any of the irregularities happen in that area. In terms of the assets that we have claimed to be disposing, there is a policy that we have established, and it's an asset disposal policy. It's one of the finance policies, but that policy speaks to exactly what you are saying, that there must be a process that is followed. And for all the assets that we're talking about, they followed exactly that process. We've got an asset register that we've cleaned because we had serious issues with the asset register that was in place, where you find this asset having asset number one and this asset again having asset number one, just because they are all computers, they are all asset number one. So we've cleaned that one up, and the asset register that you saw which AG audited and got satisfied with is a credible one. Target achievements and targets exceeded and so on. If you look at the slide that I presented earlier on, you will recognize that we're trying our level best in terms of not being just meeting the normal targets, the 50% or whatever that has been set as 100%. KPIs that we have exceeded is 13, if you look at the APP. And KPIs that we've met is 14. So if you look at KPIs that we've exceeded in terms of our performance, they contribute 37% of the annual performance plan and the annual performance report. And those that we met is just 40%. Hence, we've got that 77. Funding delays, we've raised this issue, Chair will recall, with the portfolio committee. We've raised this issue with the previous portfolio committee as well, and we've had meetings with the DG, the CFO, and we are hoping that after those meetings, especially in this financial year, we are going to see a difference. We don't know exactly what were the hurdles from the department side, but I think we've agreed that we will find a way of dealing with that. But in the meantime, as management, we've also come up with a strategy on how to deal with this if it does happen. We've approached it and talked to the CFO to say we must implement the environment policy, which is one of our financial policies, where we are going to look into our finances and say, because we've got the allocation letter anyway, let's spend this money rather than waiting for this funding to come. And when it comes, we are going to replace it if it does reoccur. But we are hoping that it is not going to occur going forward because of the engagements that we've had with the department and the commitment from the department. Resignations and targets not met. The issue here, Chair, is that we had an organogram which was really not assisting the organization. People were placed in positions, they were performing particular responsibilities, but those responsibilities were not their responsibilities in the true sense of responsibilities. It is for that reason that we had to change this organogram and review it. And yeah, a lot of, as the Chair was saying, there is a lot of changes that we've implemented in this organization because even the resignations, people when they left, there was just this vacuum. And you and me know, under normal circumstances, if someone leaves, someone must be able to pick up. But in our situation, it's either me or nothing. And we had to deal with that. And the new organogram, which we quickly approved with the board, addressed exactly that, so that we don't see these things coming up, because it's quite embarrassing, as you said, and it's not acceptable. Chairperson, thank you. I think we've covered most of the questions that were raised. If not, we are happy to come back.
Chair, if I may, one, having had the opportunity of sitting through the full year, it is possible for us to be able to also just indicate that the transition process is one that played a big part in terms of the actual execution or non-execution of the areas that Remodisa spoke to in understanding that there were some resignations and things were not achieved. We spoke to this and we identified an element of disengagement. And to that effect, we requested assistance, as it were, from DIA, as it was constituted then, to be able to just look into what's happening with the culture in the organization. In the transition with three CEOs, there was an element of detachment. and we observed that. And the CEO came in and got to be able to insist on people pulling up their socks and doing the work that they were being paid for. And sometimes as a result of that, they opted to leave. So lots of work had not been carried out because of the detachment that they had gone through. It is something that may very well be noted, that majority of the persons that had left had been with the organization for a long time. And because of the changes in leadership, decided to put the brakes and not do the work that they were supposed to be able to do, particularly in the area of research. So research area did not receive the attention that it required. In the area of marketing did not receive the attention that it required, because the persons involved in the roles were not happy with the changes that had taken place. So in a sense, it was their way of defying the leadership that was at play and let it be seen eventually that we were critical to the organization, but we're not receiving the attention that we deserve. I think also I need to be able to respond to the fact that related to communication. Way back on the 18th of July 2016, the board approved what was presented as a stakeholder engagement strategy, which really addressed the matters of communication. We did not want to be able to interfere with what had already been submitted in terms of the annual report, because much of the activities that we had relating to, among others, our park forums came through from that. Our local community engagements with the trust and traditional authorities came through from that very same. So in the capturing, we ought to have intervened much earlier. We shared that information, but it was after the auditing had already carried out. So in the handover process between the three CEOs, this document had not really been circulated, as it were, but the officials still did the work. So if you look into what we're doing in terms of international communications, we still have Mrs. Shabalala doing the work that she was doing, and she has been engaging in the ways that she had. We just did not do the intervention as needed to be. As the CEO indicated, the previous dispensation was one where board played the advisory role, but you had supply chain management being carried out without an approved policy. But if you were to be able to look into the financials of the previous years, you would come to appreciate that there was a process that was being followed. However, it was centralized around few persons, which did not really get to be able to do the adjudication process as we now have with the policy that we got approved during the financial year, as it were. So it's not that we didn't have any supply chain management process at all. There was one. It was just not formalized appropriately, which we took care of in the last financial year.
Thanks the Esimangaliso. We are going to be partners throughout these 5 years. If there's anything that we might have missed, we'll continue to engage. I think we have exceeded our time by almost 30 minutes, but it was for a good cause. Otherwise, thank you very much. We've noted all the issues, and specifically the issue of transfers. So we'll talk generally about it to the department and commit it to something. Otherwise, we indicated earlier that we would not want to argue about the issue of transfers because it impacts on service delivery. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson. You are released.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, members. Thank you.